Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Central College and Humanities Iowa, presenting the new podcast Mid-Americana, Stories from a Changing Midwest. New episodes from Season 1 are available at midamericana.com or wherever podcasts are found.
It's a Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This first half hour with us, Jim McCormick, professor of political science at Iowa State University. Jim, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Ben. Happy to be here.
I want to mention in our second half hour, we're due to have Senator Kamala Harris joining us live, presidential candidate Kamala Harris. We invite you to send your questions now via email for her, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Jim, we're grateful that you're joining us, I believe, from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, right?
That's right. Yes,
and
snowy Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
You got a big blast of winter, as we did here lower down, didn't we?
Yes, indeed. Yes. And it's continuing, actually. Here.
It is. Okay. Well, stay safe. We want to talk about Hong Kong in a little bit, also the 2020 presidential race in the 20 minutes or so that we have here. But let's start off with some of your views on impeachment. On Monday, we had this judge rejecting the Trump administration's argument that senior White House officials were immune from congressional subpoenas. Now, this concerns the former White House counsel, Donald McGahn. He has to testify, according to this judge's ruling, before the House impeachment investigators about the efforts supposedly by the president to obstruct the Mueller inquiry. This is what the judge said in that 120-page decision, a few lines of it. However busy or essential a presidential aide might be, and whatever their proximity to sensitive domestic and national security projects, the president does not have the power to excuse him or her from taking an action that the law requires. Simply stated, the primary takeaway from the past 250 years of recorded American history is that presidents are not kings. The Justice Department, representing McGahn, says it will appeal. What do you think are the implications of this ruling for what's going on now?
Well, one of the things I saw when I read that was it reminded me of what the Federalist Papers said. I think it was Hamilton who talked about that we're electing a president, not a king, and we want to have a president in place, not a king. And I think the ruling there and the quotation that you had really reflects that. I think the larger implications of it are, first of all, what will this portend in terms of John Bolton possibly testifying? He wants a court decision on whether he should testify. There's another Deputy National Security Advisor, Kupperman, who apparently is also engaged in this a court case of whether he should testify or not. I did think it was interesting, at least in the account that I read of this, and I obviously haven't read the 120-page report, by the judge, but it was pointed out that McGahn would have to appear, but the question of what questions he could answer might still be subject to further litigation in terms of what would be covered under executive privilege or what would be not. But I think what this case does, it begins to turn again on how far does executive privilege extend? You know, we go back, if you think back to the Nixon case, Nixon versus the U.S., or U.S. versus Nixon, I guess it was the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
There the judge said, you know, that executive privilege does not extend to covering up, you know, criminal activity here. So this, I think, is this case and probably the appeals court will sort of outline how far this executive privilege really would go.
Mm-hmm. Also, when we look at what is almost sure to be a Senate trial, however long Mitch McConnell there leading setting that out, however long that is, we don't know. But it looks like in a matter of weeks, best guesses, right? We're going to have a House will vote to impeach, you think, Jim?
I do. I think it'll be before Christmas here that they'll have this vote before they go for a Christmas recess, and after the new year, there will be a Senate trial probably put up very rapidly. As what I read is that Senator McConnell says that he, you know, has no option except to proceed and to proceed rather quickly.
Mm-hmm. And securing testimony from witnesses who have not thus far answered subpoenas is interesting, because when we have that Senate trial, I've seen is Chief Justice John Roberts would preside. He would have a key role, right? So explain what you see there.
Well, it would be interesting if, in fact, the case, you know, if McGahn's case goes to the appeals court, which apparently they have to. I think they have a certain number of days. I think it was until December 5th to file that. It probably wouldn't be decided by the appeals court before the trial in the Senate here, unless they really did a very quick affirmation of what the district court judge said. So it'll be interesting in terms of the timing because, of course, one of these things here, I suppose from the administration point of view, is to kind of drag these things out, and then it becomes a bit of a dead letter if the trial is already underway or even completed in the Senate. So the timing here is pretty crucial.
Mm-hmm. Jim McCormick with us, professor of political science at Iowa State University, this first half hour. If you just joined us, Senator Kamala Harris due to join us in the second half hour live. We invite your questions for her. We'll get to as many as possible. River to river at iowapublicradio.org, our email. Well, let's go back, rewind a little bit to last week and the set of hearings we had last week. Let's hear some voices here because I want to ask you about if this changed anything, if public attitudes have changed, the degree to which they have. Well, in short, not really. But let's listen to some voices here because we've got these two narratives going on, as has been predicted going into this. For instance, here's Republican Jim Jordan after the last day of hearings on Fox News, and these are Republican talking points about the hearings that you will hear repeated by various Republicans. Have a listen.
This idea that there was a this for that, a quid pro quo, did not happen, and yet they continue to say, but this is impeachable. This is not about that at all, Brett. This is about they have never accepted the will of the American people. When 63 million Americans in an electoral college landslide said, we're going to send Donald Trump to Washington to shake that town up. And the establishment here, and particularly the Democrats, have never accepted that. And they're going to do whatever it takes, Mueller report, FBI investigation, dossier, or now this, whatever it takes to try to get him out. That's what this is really about.
Okay, Jim, what do you think about that? I mean, after the last day of all those hearings corroborating evidence that there was a this for that, a quid pro quo, right? I mean, if anything was established, that was established, wasn't it?
Well, that was certainly the statement by the ambassador to the EU. I mean, it was pretty directly stated that, and as he said, this was not a kind of a secret within a few people in the administration. It said everybody was informed on that. But I think what you're seeing is, and I'm probably will play a clip from the Democratic side as well, is that we have these two kind of pillars within the American setting here. And it's notable in terms of their attitude towards impeachment. I mean, 80 to 90% of the Republicans, think obviously the impeachment inquiry is a bit of a sham. And on the other side, 80 to 90% of the Democrats think that the president should not only be impeached but removed. And these two pillars are really hard to shake, it seems to me. And obviously there are not only politicians, but I suspect there our media on either side that are kind of reinforcing some of these images.
Yeah, right. And also we see just basic facts, falsehoods being put up. The president, in reacting on Fox and Friends to last week's hearings, pushed this widely debunked theory about the 2016 election interference that a DNC server is actually physically in Ukraine and that the FBI can't get its hands on it. We had the former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch, testifying that, of course, it was Russia. This is the consensus of our entire intelligence community, right, Jim? It was Russia, not Ukraine, that interfered in the 2016 election.
Absolutely. I mean, there's plenty of evidence to support the involvement of the Russians, and much less to suggest that it's really involved the Ukrainians. I think the only piece of evidence that the Republicans are putting forth on the Ukrainian was that there was a Ukrainian official apparently wrote an op-ed piece, and it's unclear about whether this Democratic DNC operative actually, you know, was talking to Ukrainians about the election as well. I mean, those are the only two pieces of evidence that I've sort of, well, and maybe evidence that I've seen that there was this kind of Ukrainian involvement.
We heard from a Republican. Let's hear from a Democrat, Adam Schiff, the House Intelligence Committee chair, in his closing remarks last Thursday, mentioning a 2018 meeting with Russia's Vladimir Putin in Helsinki. We remember that, calling it a debacle when Trump questioned the U.S. Intelligence Committee.
I wish I had heard just some of the righteous indignation we heard in the committee today when the president question that fundamental conclusion of our intelligence agencies. But of course, they were silent when the president said that. They'll show indignation today, but they will cower when they hear the president questioning the very conclusions that our intelligence community has reached.
Okay, so let's talk before we wrap this up and move on a little bit here. You touched on it, Jim, but go into it further. Did we see anything change here? We're looking, I guess, where are your eyes? At national polls, a slight dip in support for impeachment that registered in surveys ahead of these hearings has been a little bit reversed from what the aggregates seem to indicate. And, of course, congressional Republicans would presumably react to a shift in public opinion if it was large enough.
That's right. I think in looking at this, you know, and there have been at least three or four polls that have come out since the impeachment hearing. Most of them are within the margin of error here, it seems to me. I mean, and the sort of the aggregate total is about 48% for sort of impeaching and removing the president, about 44% opposed to that. You know, I think the outlier remains among independents, and that seems to have not moved very much from these hearings. It's still at about 44-45% nationally here. What is interesting, of course, and what, you know, these national polls don't show is what might be occurring in some states or even in some districts that would put pressure on either members of the House or members of the Senate. And I don't know if we can, you know, it's kind of hard to get those kind of breakdowns here, but
right.
But there are going to be a number of Republican senators that are up. I think it's 24. You know, there are a number of Democrats who are in the House who are coming from districts that Trump won. Although, you know, and so that is going to be a problem, although a couple of the governor's races where the president was very popular in the 2016 election, the governorship turned out to be the other way. And I'm thinking of Kentucky and Louisiana here. So So some of this is, you know, the aggregate polls give you one picture, but also it's important, I think, in terms of whether members voting in the Senate or even members of the House voting, is what is happening in their kind of districts here.
Mm-hmm. Jim, we have less than 10 minutes here. I want to rapid fire through three more topics here.
Okay.
On Monday, the Senate Judiciary Chairman, Lindsey Graham, Senator Graham, announced he would hold a hearing the week after next, I think, December 11th, featuring Department of Justice Inspector General Michael Horowitz. This is something, we have so much impeachment news, so much 2020 candidate news. This is something that gets overshadowed. What is going on here, quickly, that you can tell?
Well, I think what is going on here is partly is going to be a deflection from these impeachment hearings that are going to start in the Judiciary Committee next week on December the 5th. But I think the other thing in terms of where this, for the Republicans and for the president, for the administration generally, will this give them ammunition that there was some untoward action, some illegal action in terms of getting this FISA warrant, in initiating the surveillance, in particular of Carter Page, and so that will that dominate the news cycle? Will it get much attention? And will Horowitz? You know, there's been all this speculation that Horowitz is really going to come down hard on the FBI and the intelligence community. And, you know, the same kind of thing we saw with the Mueller report, it turned out to be rather a dud ultimately in terms of coming down to any hard and fast conclusion. But I think it's in part one of the things that the Republicans are holding on to, the administration is holding on to show that not only the Mueller investigation, now the impeachment efforts with regard to Ukraine are part of a kind of an election overturn.
Mm-hmm. Hong Kong, you are deep into foreign policy with your expertise as a political scientist. Jim, let's talk quickly about that, the implications of this week's vote in Hong Kong, impact perhaps on the trade war with China, deeply affecting us here in the Midwest, our ag community. China state media continuing their attacks on this newly elected pro-democracy district councilors in Hong Kong. They had this stunning landslide victory on Sunday, the pro-democracy opposition. President Trump, our president, says he stands now with the pro-democracy protesters in Hong Kong. He cited a very good relationship with the Chinese President Xi Jinping, and pointed to the final stages. He's been saying this for weeks, final stages of an important trade deal. Also worth mentioning, before you comment, Jim, Congress recently passing a bill authorizing sanctions on Chinese and Hong Kong officials involved in human rights abuses, mandating the State Department to annually review special trade status the U.S. grants to Hong Kong. China saying we'll retaliate against the U.S. if our president signs that bill. So far, President Trump has not signed it. Give us your thoughts, Jim.
Well, I think the president really has to sign this. And I think that you can do both things. You can do the trade negotiations and take a stand on human rights here. After all, immediately after this election, the Beijing government blamed the results in Hong Kong on interference from the outside, black hands, as they called it, and pointed to the United States. So they have not been shy about attacking the United States, even in the context of these trade negotiations. I think the president has no choice but to sign this. I mean, after all, it was passed by unanimous consent in the Senate and by a vote of 412-1 in the House.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it would be subject to immediately a veto override, and it would further, I think, erode the president's any kind of standing he had in terms of human rights. The Chinese will still go ahead with the trade negotiations. After all, they are suffering from the sanctions that have been put into place. So I don't think that these have to be linked together, that there is a lot of linkage politics here, that in fact you can do both of these things at the very same time.
It's still very unclear for those listening in our audience, especially in our ag community, also manufacturing. It's unclear when this trade deal will come through, if and when.
That's right. We keep saying it's at the final stages of it. There's really two major bills, two major trade negotiations that have still not been fully completed. Of course, the other one is the USMCA,
mm-hmm.
which they're hoping to get done before Congress adjourns for the Christmas holiday here, and that would be very important for Iowa farmers as well as this, obviously, this trade deal with China. But this has been pushed back once again. So hopefully we can get it done soon. But I don't think that, and I suspect that many farmers would not want us to just turn a blind eye to what really is happening within Hong Kong. I mean, this is a major effort by democratic forces in Hong Kong to maintain the kind of system that was put into place, one country, two systems, that goes back to 1997.
Let's talk quickly about the 2020 Democratic presidential race, some developments. We've had a lot of hearings last week, the week before, so we've had to preempt a politics day, Jim. We had Amy Klobuchar, Cory Booker, strong debate performances last week in Atlanta, looking to translate that into momentum here in Iowa. Other development, of course, Michael Bloomberg and Deval Patrick now entering the race. I think we're back up to 18 candidates. Thoughts on why these Bloomberg and Patrick have entered?
Well, I think Bloomberg's position was, you know, he first originally said he wasn't going to run, and then, he took a look at it and decided that he would step back. But his judgment is, I think, that he has a chance, particularly sort of the moderate lane, if you will, to be successful and to unite the Democrats here. I mean, certainly Elizabeth Warren has taken a lot of attacks here recently in terms of the costing of her Medicare for All, and Bernie Sanders has been under attack. So he sees this, I think, as a bit of an opening. It's a little more puzzling in terms of Devon Patrick, in terms of, you know, how he could enter. Bloomberg, of course, has lots of money, has billions of dollars of money, and apparently is going to, you know, spend and sort of blanket some of these states with TV ads. It's a little more problematic in terms of where Devon Patrick would really get, you know, sort of a strong base and could make a breakthrough here, particularly in the last few weeks before the Iowa caucuses.
2 minutes left. Quickly, what do you make of the apparent polling surge by Pete Buttigieg here in Iowa, I believe in New Hampshire as well? Can he translate that to the rest of the nation, where he lags behind Sanders, Biden, and Warren?
Yeah, not so far, it seems to me. You know, he's got a little bit of an uptick in terms of non-white support, I noticed in one recent poll. But, you know, the Quinnipiac came out with a poll just this morning that again shows a national poll, which obviously can, you know, be misleading and is not applicable to Iowa or even New Hampshire per se. But it puts Biden up there, although Buttigieg is really moved up to that second place, even in the national polls. So he's making good inroads. He has lots of money. I've seen a lot of ads in Iowa for him, and he's obviously been on the ground in Iowa. And in Iowa, certainly the ground game really counts.
Mm-hmm. And he's in that centrist lane that you mentioned, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yes, indeed.
So we've got the impeachment hearings, the progress, the process, the Judiciary Committee in the coming week. Then who knows when it will go to the Senate. But how will all of this impeachment news shape the final weeks before February 3rd, do you imagine?
Well, you know, my take on it is that, you know, with the Christmas holiday coming up, you know, there's probably going to be a little bit of a lull in how some of these candidates can really make an inroad, for example, within Iowa. And so I really think that it's going to be after the new year, sort of the three-week push to the February 3rd date in Iowa of those candidates. Now, obviously, Bloomberg has said that he's not going to, you know, campaign in some of these early states. I don't know if he'll change his mind if he gets an uptick in the poll.
Okay,
I really see it as kind of a lull here coming up with the Christmas holiday and the public's attention, and then a kind of a three-week push. After the new year.
Jim McCormick, have a happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for joining us from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Professor of Political Science at Iowa State University. When we come back, Kamala Harris joins us live. Your questions, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. I'm Ben Kiefer, back in just a moment.